It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, coming to you live from SunTrust Park. And I'm chatting, as always, fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Dinky. We have got a lot to talk about, as usual, so we will get right to that. And in addition, we have a special guest this week, Dalton Del Don from Yahoo Sports, our fantasy partner. So we are just going to get right to it because we've got a lot, as I said. Let's start with one of the biggest names and, for a long time, one of the absolute stalwarts of fantasy baseball. Miguel Cabrera is off to a rough start, and he's at the point in his career where you start worrying a little bit. I don't think anybody thinks that Miguel Cabrera is going to just vanish, but you kind of look at the guy that we've sort of paralleled him to for years, Albert Pujols, and he's about at the age that Pujols started his decline and started changing from an all-around elite hitter to a power hitter who was not an all-around elite hitter. What is your level of concern with Cabrera, not for going off a cliff, but for no longer being a top-tier all-around hitter?
Yeah, I'm not that concerned. Like a little bit, because as you said, there is some precedent here and a nice comparable for him. And actually, you painted a really good picture, because when I look at Cabrera's advanced stats, he's still hitting the ball hard often. He's still hitting the ball in the air often. What he is also doing, though, is striking out more often, which could lead to that transition towards, not a 300 hitter, but still a fairly powerful hitter. That being said, he's kind of been in and out of injuries early this season, and he's just been so good. I don't want to write him off at a time when he maybe hasn't found his groove yet with some of those things. We saw, say, with Jose Bautista striking out so often in April and then has found his stroke in May. If we can give Bautista a bit of a break, we can probably give Cabrera a bit of a break. So I think he's a buy low right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're sort of in the same place on him in that I think you kind of have to acknowledge at this point, particularly as the strikeouts pile up, that the days of Miguel Cabrera hitting 320, 330 are probably past, and he probably is beginning that path to where he's not the same hitter he was. But he's been unbelievably unlucky on contact this year based on a StatCast measure that takes expected weighted on-base average based on quality of contact relative to actual weighted on-base average. He's been the unluckiest hitter in baseball. Now, he was also one of the unluckiest hitters in baseball by that same measure last year, so there may be something else going on to do with his home ballpark, his lack of speed, any number of things. It is certainly possible that there's more going on there, and it's not just unlucky, but still, he is particularly unlucky by that measure this year, and while the strikeouts are a concern, I'm with you. I think that he is a guy to get on board now. Likewise, I'm still pretty bullish on Manny Machado. I'm a little concerned as we get deeper and deeper into this year, and he's still hitting .218, but he does have 10 home runs, and some of his power production is right on par with what it's always been. So I'm a little baffled by Machado, but I'd still rather be on the buying end than on the selling end of a Machado deal right now. Where are you with him?
Yeah, 100% agree on, I would much rather buy, and you talk about someone who's had really poor batted ball luck. Like, his BABIP so far this year is .222. That's almost 100 points below his career BABIP going into the season. So, like you said, the power's there. Like, he's on a 35, 37 homer pace, and he's even stolen a couple bases after not stealing any last season. It's just, we just need that batting average to be like 70 or 80 points higher, and then he'll be what we expected him to be. But the one interesting takeaway I have with Machado, he was regarded going into the season as like a surefire first round pick and a top 10 pick in a lot of leagues. And I get it. He had third base and shortstop eligibility, and he's one of the better young hitters in baseball. But at the same time, like, we're seeing steals are so valuable right now in fantasy because there aren't many players who are stealing bases. And to get into that first round, if you're not going to be a base stealer, and even if he steals five or six this year, that's not really a base stealer. I feel like to get into that first round, you need to be 35 homer player, because there's plenty of power out there. So at least a 35 homer player, and probably also around a 300 hitter. And this is someone whose career high in batting average is .294. He's had some .280 type seasons, but has never been a 300 hitter. So I wonder if by next season, people will maybe settle Machado into more of a second round area as a really good hitter, but it's hard to get in that first round right now if you can't steal bases, can't hit and don't hit 300.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is a combination of two things. And one is just the sort of all-around excitement that this is a great player. And I know that that's not generally how you draft in fantasy, but Manny Machado is just one of the really exciting, fun-to-watch players in the game. And so I do wonder if that factors in. Another thing is projection. He's young, and we've sort of seen that broad base of skills. We've seen some of this, you know, with other guys in his cohort. We've seen, I think, some of this with Carlos Correa, that this is a guy that we know has all the tools in the world and everyone expects to be a great player. You know, maybe right now he's not – well, this year it's a little different. But, you know, we've seen this with these young, really exciting players where we kind of get out a little in front of them because you know it's coming. I'm a huge Machado fan. I love the player. With Cabrera, would rather be on the buying end than the selling end. But, you know, you do wonder when he turns this around. I'm usually Mr. Pour Cold Water on guys. We've got a whole bunch of guys I'm excited about today, so that's fine.
That's good.
I'm excited about Corey Dickerson. I really am. That power is legit, and it always has been. That's the one thing. He has always had pure power, like not a lot of guys in the game. So it doesn't take a lot for him to turn that into production. So, look, I don't think he's going to hit 330 all year, but I think he's a legit power source. I think he's a guy you want. I think he is a guy that I take seriously as a north of 30 home runs for the season kind of guy this year, so which is to say I like him for 20 more home runs this year. I'm in. I'm buying on Dickerson. You want to talk me down?
I'm going to talk you down a little bit. If I gave you the overrun on a 280 batting average the rest of the way, where do you think you would sit on that?
Little under, but I don't think it's a bad number, and I don't think it's a lot under.
Right. Okay. So, you know, as you said, he's not going to hit 335 probably the rest of the season. And I'm with you that Corey Dickerson, I think, now maybe has figured out how to be not a member of the Rockies and be a successful hitter, and that's good and can stick in shallow league lineups. But I also think that generally when someone gets red hot, especially early in the season, and pushes their season numbers to something that's like really impressive, like right now he has a season OPS over 1,000, right? That's that high batting average. The answer for the Dickerson owners is probably always sell. Just like it was sell for the Ryan Zimmerman owners in April, it was probably sell for the Eric Thames owners in April. And it's not to say that Ryan Zimmerman and Eric Thames won't be productive the rest of the way, but early in the season when you've got this guy who's hitting out of his mind, like and he's not Mike Trout, like it's probably always sell. Like at least float his name out there. And if you can float Dickerson out there and get a legitimately, you know, rock-solid outfielder who's off to a just okay start to the season, then it's probably worth it. But it's really hard, I know, for fantasy owners to look at the guy who's maybe the best player in their lineup right now, like the most productive one in May, and say, oh, I'm going to trade him away. But those who have the courage to do that, like those who traded Ryan Zimmerman for an ace starter or Eric Thames for a true stud hitter are probably going to be happy about that by the end of the year.
When you mentioned that, and that was what I was going to recommend, because I actually just did this, not with Dickerson, but, you know, I'm not crazy about the trade the guy who's hot for the guy at the same position who's safer. I'm not crazy about those. I do like identifying guy who's super hot at the peak of his value to fill another need, and I just did that. I just got Zach Greinke for Ryan Zimmerman, was really excited to do that. You look at Zimmerman in May, and he's been good, but nothing like April. So it's that kind of thing to me. If you've got a need somewhere else, and then you can find a fit, you can find somebody who needs what Dickerson offers. You know, in my case with Zimmerman, I found somebody who had just lost Freddie Freeman. And so they were really excited to bring on Zimmerman, and you had a match. So I think that's where you can really find a fit is somebody who has a need in the outfield and you have a need elsewhere, and then you've got to fit. I think that's probably, in a lot of cases, going to be a deal you can live with more easily and a deal you can make more easily than the sort of my hot guy for your underperforming guy at the same position.
Yeah, I understand that. And I would also say if you do stay within the position, if you're trading that hot guy, you need to climb up. Let's go back to, like, our position tiers, like, from draft season. Like, you need to climb up multiple rungs on that ladder. Like you're like when I'm saying, if I'm saying sell him, I'm going almost back to those preseason tiers and looking at someone from the top two tiers. You know, maybe the AJ Pollock owner needs a little power, and you know, and you can, and you need some speed, and you'll stash Pollock until he comes back and hopefully have a great base stealer after that. But I'm looking, if I'm selling a Dickerson or if I was selling a Thames or a Zimmerman back in April, I want to get into, say, those top two tiers probably from draft season, especially early in the season when those rankings are still a little bit relevant.
Yep. Jake Lamb, another guy I like a lot, another guy I take seriously as a legitimate power source. You know, he did tail off some last year, but I think the power is real. He's hitting in a good place to hit. He's hitting in a lineup that has been pretty productive. Again, I like Jake Lamb. I'd like to have him. You know, again, we're talking about the challenge here is, you know, we're talking about guys at the peak of their value, but Lamb is a guy I don't expect to tail off that much. He's a guy that if I had a need, I wouldn't feel like I was buying at peak value and waiting for him to plummet if I were to make a move for him. Where are you on Lamb?
Yeah, I mean, he was so good in the first half last season and then so not good in the second half of last season, and now he's so good again. And I think the second half of last season is probably going to prove to be the outlier. His plate patience is slowly climbing throughout his career, and it's even at its best so far this year with his walk rate. So this is someone who I think is continuing to improve as a hitter. As you mentioned, the environment is really hitter-friendly for him. And that helps. I mean, we tend to do that with the Colorado hitters, but the Arizona hitters, although it's not Colorado, it's still really hitter-friendly environment. I'm inclined to. He's hitting 287. I think that may be a little high, but I could see 270, 275, and the power continue all season, and him get to 35 home runs, or maybe even a little more than that.
Yep, for sure. A guy, personal favorite of mine, Devin Travis, is really coming on lately, and you know. Quietly in some ways, because he hasn't piled up big numbers in some things, but he's hitting the ball really hard. You know, he's miscast as a leadoff hitter, but he's hitting the ball hard. He's getting doubles. It wouldn't shock me if it started turning into a few home runs. The thing about Travis is he's got four steals, and that's something that could be part of his game. And if you tell me, you know, another 8-10 steals from here on out to go with the other things he could do, he's a sneaky pickup, and in shallow leagues, I think is still waiver bait. What leagues are you picking up Travis in?
Yeah, I would want to own him in 12 team leagues. I'm not as in maybe on Travis as some other people. I'm not really that excited about him in 10 team leagues yet, and I'll explain why. So Donaldson and Tulowitzki are supposed to be back for the Blue Jays' next game on Friday. So. And Pilar has established himself as their leadoff hitter. So that probably means that Travis goes all the way down to the bottom, like sixth or lower in the lineup, which isn't great. Like, it's not the end of the world, but it's not great. But more my concern with Travis is that he might be one of those players who's a more valuable real-life hitter than a fantasy hitter. I like what you said about the steals. If he can steal 10 bases this year, that would be nice, 10 or 12 bases. But so far from him, we've seen okay but not really special power, right? 11 home runs in 101 games last year, 3 home runs so far this year. If he's like a 12, 13, 14 homer guy and like a 10, 12 steal guy, like and he hits for decent average, like that's not bad, and it's good in a 12-team league. I want a little more wow, I think, in a 10-team league. Like, I want my middle infielder to either be a 20 homer guy or a 20 steal guy, like something a little more special. And I want to see Travis in some way. I don't think it will be the steals. That's not really the Blue Jays game, and he's not like lightning fast. So I think it would have to be the home runs. He's a great doubles hitter right now, but we haven't really seen, I haven't seen enough with home runs so far in his career for me to put him in that 10-team league really discussion. I think a lot of people like him there, though.
Somewhat, a guy in a somewhat similar position and a somewhat similar question. Dansby Swanson, a guy who got off to a really, really brutally slow start and is coming on lately. Different skill set than Travis, but also a middle infielder and also a really promising, exciting young player. Same question. In what formats do you want to have Swanson active right now?
Yeah, and I think actually for me it'll be pretty much the same answer. 12 team for sure. I mean, he's better this month. He's hitting 266. He has an 809 OPS in May. So he's basically come back in May to being what we expected him to be. Probably, I don't think people were expecting him to be a 300 hitter. So He's got a couple homers this month. He hasn't stolen a base this month. But same kind of thing where Swanson maybe has more long-term potential, but for now, he's probably more like a 12, 13 homer guy. I don't even think he's a 10 steal player yet. So, I mean, 12 team leagues, I would consider him. I'd rather own Travis. Would you agree with that?
I'd rather, if I'm picking somebody up and hoping to catch lightning in a bottle, I'd like my chances of doing that better with Travis.
Yeah.
I like my chances of him doing something exciting and running into a nice combination of home runs and steals before the end of the year. If I just need somebody who's not going to drag me down, I feel safer with Swanson despite his 150 month. But at this point, if I'm picking somebody up, I'm probably looking for a jolt, and I like my chances of getting that jolt more from Travis than from Swanson.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I did reference him probably going to the bottom of the Blue Jays lineup, and I do think that's likely. At the same time, he is red hot, and the team has been playing better of late. So there is that small chance that maybe Givens puts him second, and where he batted last game, and puts Donaldson third and Bautista fourth. So I would want to see that in the coming days. That would be really nice if Travis stayed second, and after Pillarin in front of Donaldson, now you've got a chance to score more runs, and
yep,
that could drive his value a little more. I think Swanson probably, Brandon Phillips is hitting fine. I think Swanson probably stays lower in the lineup for a while.
Yeah. Salvador Perez has come into the power spike. I think some people thought he might have in him. I mean, I don't think it was necessarily expected, but I also don't think it's shocking. Do you think this is a hot 6 weeks, or do you think this is maybe a peak season as he enters peak ages for power?
Yeah, I guess a little bit of both. I definitely, when you look at his fly ball rate and his hard contact rate, this definitely seems to be someone who's making a concerted effort to try to hit for power. And a lot of, like it's been well documented, a lot of hitters around baseball are doing that, and he seems to be part of that movement, someone who's trying to hit more home runs, and he's never been someone who walks often. So this actually works really well for him. He was never really that selective in the first place. So trying to sell out for power is nice. And for fantasy owners, it's also nice. I mean, even if he doesn't continue to hit 280, if he pushes his home run total to 11 now, like if he can get up close to 30, anything above 25 this season, like he's going to finish in the top three fantasy catchers. That almost always does the trick. The concern with Perez is that he plays so often, and
yep,
in the past few seasons, he's not as productive in the second half, and the general assumption is that he wears down. Is that enough to sell high, like to trade high on him right now, and just in anticipation of that? For me, it's probably not enough. I think for me, I would just hold, and I don't know, for me, the fact that he's faded in the past few seasons isn't a concrete enough thing to say I have to get this guy off my roster by July. I just don't believe in it enough. I would feel really dumb if I did it just for that reason, and then he continued to hit for power in the second half. Like, would it be enough for you to want to trade him away?
I wouldn't be looking to get rid of him, but I would sure be listening to offers.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Especially with him coming off the three-homer game. It wasn't a three-homer game. It was a three-homer day, which felt like a three-homer game because it was a doubleheader day. And that really, really drove some buzz on him. So, yeah, I think that might be a good way to do it. You'd listen to offers. If someone asks you about him, you would be not reluctant to part with him if the deal made sense for you. But
I
wouldn't be looking to, like, for sure to get him off my roster.
Right. Right. It's not like some of these guys we talked about earlier who are just out of their minds and you say, I got to cash in on this while I can.
Yeah.
A guy that we've talked about, a guy I like a lot, Cameron Maben, has 10 steals, is scoring runs. I'm not sure what to do with him because he's still not hitting for average. But he's a guy who looks like, the question to me is, do the steals continue? Because this is not the guy he's been the last couple of years. Do you think 10 steals now, do you think that Cameron Maben can get you 20 steals from here to the end? Because if so, he's almost certainly valuable in most formats.
Yeah, I mean, if everything comes together for Maven, he gets you 20 more steals, and he stays in that leadoff spot. And like, he's filling in for Yunel Escobar right now, but he's filling in really well. And he talked about how he likes hitting out of the leadoff spot for a couple of reasons. And, I mean, if he could hit in front of Mike Trout and steal 20 more bases this season, if he hits in front of Mike Trout, he's going to score plenty of runs. Like, that's almost a given, so especially with his speed. So if he can stay in that leadoff spot, but I do feel like those two things happening together are highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if they will let him run as much. when he's hitting. He just had a three-steal game, and interestingly enough, that came right before he started hitting in front of Trout. And since he's been hitting in front of him, like, he has a stolen base, but that's it. Just one stolen base in a handful of games, and that all makes some sense to me, not wanting to send a runner when you have the best hitter in baseball up. So it's almost like an either-or. He drops down to seventh in the lineup again and steals 30 bases this year, or he stays hitting in front of Trout, scores runs at a nice rate, but maybe only steals another dozen bases or something the rest of the way. Either way, I think 15-team leagues for sure, maybe in a 12-team league if I really had a need for that kind of profile of a hitter.
The other thing is that you wouldn't want to put too much on a bet for Cameron Maben to play 140 games, unfortunately.
Yeah, for sure.
We move to starting pitchers, and the guy I was talking about, I just picked up Zach Greinke. I'm pretty much buying. And I was down on him coming into the year, but there's so much to like about what he's done in so many ways. He's been across the board really good. I don't know that I am willing to put him top tier. I don't know that I am willing to put him in the top, 10 starters. But he might be on the fringe of it. I'm pretty much buying. I mean, he's looking a lot like what's exciting to me is he's not looking like the guy who had the ridiculous 166 ERA that was somewhat unsustainable, but he's looking like the guy from before that. He's looking like the guy who was a really, really good starter with the Dodgers in his non-super outlier year. I think it's sustainable. Do you buying, Greinke?
It's the strikeout rate that has me buying on him. That strikeout rate's back up. I mean, if you go through his career history, like last year, as far as his FIP goes, last year's a bit of an outlier where it was, over four. Typically, it's in the low threes, and I think that's where, like, he's a 2.82 ERA right now. I'd be happy with a 3.3 or something like that the rest of the way. And we briefly discussed, like, you trading for Greinke earlier in the week, and as I started to think about it, it was, if you're in the market for a starter, like, who do you trade for? You know what I mean? Like Corey Kluber's hurt, and Syndergaard's hurt, and Bumgarner's hurt, and Verlander's not pitching well, and the Cubs guys aren't pitching as well as we hoped. And the starting pitcher market is so hard to gauge right now that Greinke, when you step back and look at it, he's pitching really well, and the numbers back up that he's not just being successful, he's actually pitching well. And in his career, he's had many seasons where he's been very effective. So in this season, that's good enough for me to consider trading for him if I needed a starting pitcher, because the options just aren't as plentiful as they normally would be. I mean, if you want, you can go after Carlos Carrasco, but he just left a start, 10 days ago because he was injured. So there just aren't many. If you're not getting Kershaw, Scherzer, or Sale, there aren't many pitchers to target in that next tier.
And he's kind of the definition of a guy that is tradable in that you could have him and not believe this. You could have taken him reluctantly, and, it's entirely possible that some people took him and said, man, I'm going to hope he gets hot and I'm going to get out. That's happening in some places. Now, some people drafted him because they believed in him and they thought last year was the outlier, but I guarantee you there are people who are looking to get out now who are saying, I don't believe this. I didn't believe in this guy coming in. I'm really happy with what I've got, and I'm going to cash out now. Like I said, I'm on the other end of that, but I think he is a guy who could very much be in play in both directions.
Yeah, and Greinke wasn't drafted by anyone as their number one starter, and by most people even probably as their number two. So if that owner hasn't run into a ton of injuries, he might already have a Sale or a Scherzer at the top of his rotation and say, oh, okay, I can part with Greinke. Whereas when you go to the owner of those players, they're like, well, I can't part with my best starting pitcher. Greinke is a little, as you said, is kind of a little bit of found money maybe for some owners.
Yep. Eduardo Rodriguez has been really good, has kind of finally been the guy that we were waiting for him to be. Again, I'm buying. This is Matthew's optimistic version of the Fantasy 411. I like Eduardo Rodriguez a lot. I like the stuff. I like the composure. I'm buying. How high are you on Rodriguez? Is he a guy you're looking to acquire?
Yeah, absolutely. He's an own in all leagues. In fact, he was traded in the Tout Wars League a couple weeks ago, and I regret that I wasn't in on that. I should have been more aggressive. What he was traded for is not what I thought were required to get him, and I wish I had put an offer in on it. Everything looks really good here. The strikeout rate is up to 10 strikeouts per nine innings, which is really nice. His walk rate's staying steady to what it was in previous seasons. His FIP kind of matches his ERA. I expect the Red Sox lineup to only get more productive as the season goes along. I think this is someone, yeah, that you need to own in 10-team leagues until he gives us a real reason not to.
Mike Clevinger had a really exciting start recently. The thing that worries about me about him, that worries me about any of these guys that you talk about short-term acquisition, talk about streaming, guys like that. The thing that worries me is that he has not consistently thrown strikes at the major league level, and those guys can just kill you in a start or two. So I am lukewarm at best on Clevinger. Can you talk me into him?
No, now we can go both get negative after we've been so positive on so many players that, yeah, his walk rate needs to come down. Like, his walk rate this year is 5.7 per nine innings, and in his career, 5.1. Like, I'm not racing out to get a pitcher who with that kind of walk rate. His BABIP allowed this season is 171. Like, that's going to do for him, like, probably 100-point correction in his next few starts. So, I mean, I have nothing against picking up Clevinger in a 15-team league, but even for those who are dealing with injuries and just need to latch on to someone, like, you can grab him, but I wouldn't expect him to be the long-term solution.
Jeff Samardzija, the 2017 Phil Hughes, 71 strikeouts, 10 walks, and an ugly ERA. What's the truth?
Yeah, everybody's saying to buy low on Samardzija right now because his ERA is so much higher than his FIP, yet, like, with a little bit of understanding of how all those numbers work, like, he's fitting the definition of a pitcher whose ERA is going to be a lot higher than his FIP because, as you said, his strikeout-to-walk ratio is so great right now. It's a pitcher-friendly home park. I think it's worth a buy-low offer on Samardzija. Like, maybe his owner just looks at the 4 or 5, 7. I do think if there's a stat that fantasy owners overrate, it's ERA. It just catches your eye. I think ERA and batting average are the two ones that maybe catch fantasy owners' eyes more than they should. It's worth a buy-low offer. That being said, that FIP is 296. I'm not expecting anything like 296 for his ERA the rest of the way. Like, I'd be happy with his ERA to be the 3.8 that it was last season.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that's fair?
I think that's reasonable. Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, it's the improved strikeout rate that has me thinking that even with a reasonable ERA, he could be fairly valuable for you.
Right, that's the thing. It's that combination that makes him worth having.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Ross, really nice first start. Guy that's kind of been hard to read, been inconsistent, but easy to be optimistic if you want to be. I think worth a flyer in some cases. How deep a league or shallow a league are you going after Joe Ross?
Yeah, I would own him in a 12 team, and I would consider him in a 10. I looked at Ross when he was brought back up. So if we look at what he's done this season, like, he started the year in the minors, but that was all related to off days and them having four veteran starters and just using an extra reliever and leaving him in the minors. So I'm not going to hold that against him. So he came up and he had a great 7-inning start against the Braves. Okay, that's good. And then he had a really rough start at Coors Field, which we typically give pitchers a pass for. And then he had a bad start against the Mets. And then he got sent down, and then he got brought back up, and he had this stellar start against the Mariners. So if he had just had those four starts in succession at the beginning of the season, like, if we were four starts into the season and Ross had two great starts, one bad start at Coors Field and one other bad start, I think I would tell owners to hold on him and be a little more patient with him. So, I mean, there is that issue with them working on his mechanics, but I'm going to trust their pitching coaches that they're happy with the work they did with him. And I think he's someone who's worth adding with all the injuries to pitchers around baseball. I think he's someone worth adding to see where this goes. It's also nice to own a starting pitcher on one of the best teams in the National League.
Right, yep.
You like the matchups typically, and you like the supporting cast. That's just a good position to be in.
We will get to closers in just a moment. But before we do, I want to take a minute to talk to you about the StatCast podcast, a show dedicated to the analytics that drive the front office decisions in the modern game. It's hosted by Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. And last week they discussed a surprising name that keeps popping up alongside Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge atop the exit velocity leaderboards. If you want to find out who that is, you can download it on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcast by searching for StatCast podcast or going to www.statcastpodcast.com. Those guys do really cool work. I've been writing a little with them now and having fun with it. I recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I know Mike has put out some interesting stuff, for example, that fantasy owners can use on Jackie Bradley Jr., who's a possible buy low right now, and people who are worried about his slow start. And Mike's been showing some really nice StatCast data as a good example of why we could expect him to turn it around soon.
Yep. We will talk closers for a moment. I think maybe the Nationals closer question is one we're not going to talk about for a while. Dusty Baker, formerly named Dakota Glover, his closer. I'm not sure Glover is an elite guy. I think he's a good closer and an outstanding opportunity, and that means I like him a lot. I do think, you know, sometimes we get really excited about these young kids who come up and throw crazy hard. He's not quite in that category, and I think it's worth remembering. Don't delude yourself into thinking you're getting a Kyle Barraclough getting saves. But he's quite good, and he's got a great opportunity. And he's pretty much a must-own across the board right now.
Yeah, I agree. And we speculated, and I'll give you full credit. You kind of took the lead on this theory back at the end of spring training that he was maybe the one that they wanted, but they just weren't 100% sure that he was ready, maybe at the end of spring training. But then if he showed he was ready, you know, we talked about that when Blake Treinen had the job right at the beginning of the season, and I remember you mentioning that they didn't feel comfortable clearly with Kelly. They gave Treinen a shot, but Glover's probably the one that could actually run with the job. Now, it'll just be interesting to see if he pitches well enough or if they decide to trust him enough to not actually trade for a proven closer in 2 months. At the very least, you're right. He needs to be owned in every league right now because he's going to get plenty of save chances at the back end of their bullpen. And worst case scenario is, you know, 2 months from now, we're talking about how they just traded for Kelvin Herrera or David Robertson or something, and then Glover goes back to waivers for the rest of the season. But it's definitely a risk worth taking with him.
Yep. Cam Bedrosian is getting closer, facing hitters, closing in. I talked down Bud Norris, but he has pretty much secured the job. And I'm beginning to think that even when Bedrosian comes back, they might use him as a fireman, as a high-leverage guy, as a don't-let-the-pre-arbitration player rack up saves that make him more expensive an arbitration guy. And maybe Bud Norris sticks around. Look, Bud Norris at any time could have just a brutal 2 weeks and lose the job. But I don't think he's just inherently going to lose the job as soon as Bedrosian comes back and throws a couple of good games and shows that he's ready to pitch the ninth. Do you see this differently than I do?
No, I mean, in a world where Fernando Rodney still has a closer job and has 12 saves, I mean, think about this. An owner could have Bud Norris and Fernando Rodney as their closers and be among their league leaders in saves right now. I think that they have 21 saves between the two of them for zero cost, I'm sure, in any league, just to grab off the waiver wire. But Norris is actually pitching well. I mean, his ERA is low, his FIP's low, his WHIP's low, his strikeout rate's high. I feel like Mike Socha is a manager who tends to like those veterans at the back end of the bullpen. I think Bedrosian's their best reliever, but I don't see why the Angels kick Norris out of the job if he doesn't blow any additional saves between now and when Bedrosian comes back. And it's not like this is like Roberto Osuna or someone with, you know, 70 career saves coming back from the DL. This is someone who's had a couple little chances to be closer and has just gotten injured at the wrong times so far in his career and could be a closer one day, but I'm not that confident about a stash of Bedrosian. I think it's fine to do in a 15-team league, but in anything shallower, he wouldn't be my favorite stash anymore.
Brad Hand got a save last night, did not know he was getting a save until they called and said, you're the guy. They are still not committing to him being the guy, but they're open to him being the guy. He's pretty doggone good, and I don't think it would shock anybody if he ran with that. How aggressive are you about picking up Hand right now with the acknowledgement that it's a bad team with a lot of uncertainty consistently in the back of their bullpen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do think Hand is probably the best reliever in that bullpen, so it's nice to believe when you think is the best reliever in that bullpen actually gets a shot at closing, and they do have other lefties, so they can let him close. It would have been nice if that save wasn't a 25-pitch save where he gave up two hits and a walk. At the same time, he struck out two batters, and that's what he does well. I could see him being their closer, and I think it's cool that this point's right after the Bedrosian, because I think there's your one of your easy switches. If you've been stashing someone like Bedrosian looking for saves, Hand is where you go, you know, as soon as you hear this podcast. They didn't immediately say after the game that Hand is their new closer. They kind of talked about how it could be him and it may not be. I think if I had to guess who gets the next save chance, it's probably Hand. And looking at his performance the past couple of years, he has the skills to hold the job. It may not, as you said, be a huge volume job, but it could be good enough to help you in even a 12-team league.
Right. In just a moment, we will bring in Dalton Del Don from Yahoo Sports, but we're going to talk about the two start pitchers before we move along. And I was not crazy about this bunch. There was not a lot to like for me. Trevor Bauer, home for Oakland at Kansas City. Daniel Norris at Kansas City, home for the White Sox. Charlie Morton at Minnesota at Texas. Ricky Nolasco, home for Atlanta and Minnesota. Matt Garza at the Mets and home for the Dodgers. Jeremy Hellickson at Miami and home for the Giants. Matt Moore, home for Washington at Philly. I think the only guy in this that I like at all is Charlie Morton. And I don't like those matchups much, but I do like the pitcher. And I there's a chance that he can ring up 18 strikeouts for you next week. So I think he's the one of those guys that I like at all. I am really down on Matt Moore right now. We could have a whole segment talking about Ricky Nolasco and the 16 home runs he has allowed in 10 starts. 9 of those starts have been in really friendly ballparks. That is just amazing. Am I missing somebody? Is there somebody that I should like more than I do?
No, well, it is a sketchy bunch. I will say that if you're down on Matt Moore, and I'm not going to say anything positive either, then that is
over.
Really troubling, because we were the ones who were really optimistic when he was traded to the Giants that this was all going to work out for him. And so if we're off of him, I would say Nolasco, at least they're both home starts, so I would consider it. And the Braves lineup without Freeman is a little bit worse. I would say, if I was reaching on one, I agree with you on Morton. If I was going to reach on one of the other ones, the matchups for Bauer are really good. And he has been okay recently. So you get home against the A's. That lineup's not very scary. And then at the Royals. And the Royals are probably still the best matchup right now in the American League. And maybe,
right.
I say the Giants probably are at San Francisco. It would be in all of baseball. But at the Royals is very favorable. So if I was going to chase a win, I think Bauer's the other one I would consider.
Yep. All right, well, this is where I step aside. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk. And we will now bring in Dalton Del Don from Yahoo Sports. Thanks much.
So as Matthew said, I'm here with Dalton Del Don right now from Yahoo Sports, and really excited to have Dalton on the show. How are you doing, Dalton?
I'm doing okay. It's funny that we planned today to talk about Yahoo friends and family, and I lost 7 points overnight. So it's just fitting, just perfect timing for me.
Yeah, I felt that I had the same jinx that you're having where I was on your podcast yesterday with Andy Behrens, and Andy emailed me and said, we're going to talk about your juggernaut team and friends and family. And like, as soon as I got I don't even know if there were games going on when I got the email, and my team started sinking in the standings. Like, it was like the email jinx came where he referred to my team as a juggernaut, and then they just fell right down the standings. But the good news is we're both in the race, and hopefully you don't have as many injuries right now as my team has, and that, like, hopefully for your sake. Actually, I kind of hope that everyone does have as many injuries as my team has, so it'll help me hang around. But I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the players on your friends and family team, because they're probably players you've been following pretty closely so far this year, and I've been having a lot of fun with this league. It's a different format for me and really enjoying it. First, I'd like to talk about Jonathan Villar. So he's still getting home runs, he's still getting stolen bases, but he's not hitting for average. A little better in May, but overall just still .222 this season. Where do you think his value's gone since draft day?
So I wasn't, like, ever targeting him, but he ended up on a bunch of my teams just because this is a 25-year-old who hit 19 homers and led the league, I believe, in bags with 62 last year. And I would regularly get him in the late third rounds, early fourth, and I'm just wanted to be agnostic, and I'm like, those numbers can regress and he'll still be plenty worth this area. So far, a mixed bag. I mean, I knew the strikeouts were going to be a problem, so the batting average, this is not shocking, but I don't think he'll end up at .220. I think he'll go back more toward his career mark at .256. Stolen bases are premium. He, as you said, he also is hitting for power still. Miller Park is quietly the best stadium for left-handed home runs over the past 3 years, and obviously, I don't know what the answer to the lost value, because to me, his value was nowhere. People were already counting in the regression where he was going, and at least the drafts I was in.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, maybe he hasn't really lost any value because so many people were expecting regression. So now we look at him and we say, okay, you were right. Right? Like the batting average regression so far has been a little more than everyone expected, but the power regression has been less than people expected. I didn't see projections out there for another 62 steal season. People were still, I felt like, were in the 40s, you know, maybe 50. So maybe overall he actually hasn't really regressed. He just kind of is what we expected him to be. And there, in a season where so many players have been injured, I think there's nothing wrong with having just a healthy, in his prime player who overall in production is kind of what we expected.
He could take a walk, too, quietly. I mean, he's pretty good. I mean, he had a 369 on base last year.
Yeah, I know that they haven't always now used him at the top of the lineup. They did experiment with him in another spot, but I think he's still going to stay there, which is good for his run scored. Like, that is, the Brewers are an under, I think they're getting their due now, but I think overall, like, as far as production goes, they're a lineup that's fairly productive and I think should be pretty productive the rest of the way. So that really helps, too.
Yeah, I'm not totally regretting the pick despite the 220 average. I think that average will pick up, and he's a, again, he's still entering his prime right now. I know that it's just a 637 OPS and the batting average is ugly, but the bags will be there, and I'm okay with where I got him at.
Mm-hmm. Next player I wanted to mention was Corey Dickerson, and Matthew and I earlier in the podcast talked a little bit about him, and Matthew especially was really buying in on him as like a season-long contributor. Are you feeling like he's someone, like, is he someone you would be, without divulging all your secrets, obviously, like, is he someone you would be recommended owners kind of look to get out on right now and trade him away, or just hold him and see where this ride goes?
Well, I didn't expect this in a 14-team league. I got him in one of the final couple rounds. Left, you know, Coors Field, and obviously his numbers dipped last year and way more difficult part than Tropicana. But, you know, the 389 BABIP is the hit rate is super high, but he hits a lot of fly balls, and the home run per fly ball ratio isn't totally out of control. He's hitting leadoff now even, so I'm more of a hold guy, actually. I'm not looking to shop him. I think he's going to be plenty. I mean, the 335 batting average is obviously going to come down, but I think the power will be there.
Yeah, we talked about him as, like, kind of in the middle between hold and sell high as to maybe what I kind of referred to as a float. So, like, Float his name out there, or when someone sends you an offer, maybe send them a counter offer with him in it as a bit of a sell high, and just see where it goes if you can get a legitimate stud, you know, proven stud hitter for him, but not someone who you need to run from right now before it comes all crashing down.
Totally agree with that advice. I'm guessing that a lot of people in most leagues will be skeptical. That's just my guess, but that makes total sense to float him out there.
Yeah, I see that sometimes on Twitter. People say to me things like, you know, should I sell high on Yonder Alonso or something, they would say a couple weeks ago right now. And I'm like, well, like, I guess so, but I'm not sure if Yonder Alonso is ready to be sold high on yet. Like, if another owner in your league is going to be like, oh, yeah, I got to have him, you know, kind of thing. Like I think, and I think Dickerson, although more accomplished than Alonso, maybe in that group where it's not worth selling high because you won't get enough of an upgrade to make it not worth just at least keeping him and seeing where it all goes. But if someone in their league, I mean, he has had productive stretches with the Rockies where maybe someone thinks that he's right back to there. So, that, like, at least see what's out there for him. Ryan Schimpf.
Yeah.
So Ryan Schimpf is, like, to me, is one of the most fascinating players in baseball. He could hit 30 home runs this year. He could also bat 150. He could even do both. I've always said that he can't bat 150 and hit 30 home runs because there's no way a team will let a guy bat 150 and be in their lineup long enough to hit 30 home runs. Although if anyone could do it, it could be him with his walk rate playing for the Padres, who don't have a lot of other options. Where do you see, like, is he someone you've been using a lot or not? And what do you see his value like? Because he does tear down his fantasy team's batting average, but he's a potential 30 homer player.
Yeah, I have him in a few leagues, and I looked this up this morning, and he is currently on pace for 41 homers and 7 other extra base hits. I mean, that is just,
yeah,
it is, as you said, one of the most fascinating seasons ever. And, you know, it's one thing to hit, like, 230 or something to bring, you know, these power guys. It happens all the time. But 150 is obviously a problem. But at the same time, 14-team league, second base eligible, on pace for 40 homers, I just have been playing the matchups with him. And having said that, the other problem with him is he hasn't been, like, just crushing only righties, where, you know, that would be a lot more helpful. His OPS is, I believe, actually higher against lefties so far. So I've just been using him based on the matchups. And, I mean, it's tough to have a definitive answer for you with this because it's something that we've maybe never seen before.
I know, and it's just even, like you said, like 11 home runs, 2 doubles, And, you know, he has more home runs than he has singles this season, but he hits everything in the air. So basically he either strikes out, which he does quite regularly, or flies out, or hits a home run. And I guess you just, yeah, if I don't, I think in a 10-team league, you can't use him because of the batting average. And you probably just get your power elsewhere. But even in a 12-team league, like, I feel like he has to be owned, and you have to just cross your fingers that while he's in your lineup, you can get even a 210 or 220 average out of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's the league's premier 3-2 outcome player right now. I mean, he had 20 homers in just 276 at-bats as a rookie last year, so like, the power is not a fluke. I mean, let's just hope he can hit 220 and not 150. I mean, that'll be the difference. But, yeah, again, 14-team league, Yahoo Friends and Family, I'm dealing with injuries, middle infield and third base eligible. He's mostly been in my lineup this season.
Yeah, most importantly, I hope he just stays in the Padres lineup because I want to see as a baseball fan where all of this goes. Like, I just find what these outlier guys, most hitters fit into some sort of a box, and I love these guys who you just can't get your head around. So I hope he stays. I want to see where he's at the end of the year and beyond. Now we'll go from a low-end player to a couple really high-end players. So Chris Sale has been unreal, and is he challenging Clayton Kershaw, whose strikeout rate is down overall this year? Is he challenging him for, like, number one starter supremacy, or is it still Kershaw and then everybody else?
It's still Kershaw and everybody else for me, considering that Kershaw has a 2.01 ERA and a 0.82 whip, and two of his 10 starts have came in Coors Field this season. I mean, that is just incredible. And he still pitches in the easier division, the easier park, so it's still Kershaw for me. But Chris Sale personally has helped carry my friends and family team big time. I mean, he's obviously been super impressive. Last night he was searching for a MLB record for 9 consecutive starts with 10-plus Ks in the same season. He failed that but still got the win. Remember briefly last year people worried about his dip in K rate, and the White Sox are trying to get him to put the ball, pitch to contact a little bit? Pretty funny if we think about him moving to Fenway and now 101 strikeouts in 73 innings. So I think he's the clear Cy Young favorite, going to still be the number two fantasy pitcher from here on out, but I'm not ready to put him in the category as Kershaw.
Yeah, I agree with you with that, with Kershaw. I mean, his just consistency is just so remarkable. But so you would put Sale ahead of Scherzer now?
Oh, that's close.
Or is that splitting hairs, either one?
It's totally splitting hairs, yeah. I could see the argument for the other side.
Yeah, I think so, too. The reason I mentioned Sale is in one of my leagues, not this one that we're in, but in one of my leagues, I did make an approach towards the Sale owner, and then he basically said, like, you're asking for the best fantasy starter right now. And in my head, I was like, no, I'm not, because Clayton Kershaw is the best fantasy starter. I know Sale is, like, so far this season, but I would still pay way more in a trade for Kershaw than for Sale. And I don't think Sale's going to tail off to an immense degree, but it's like my head even can't even wrap itself around Kershaw having even a 3 ERA the rest of the season. Whereas for Sale, I would be like, oh, yeah, 3 ERA, really good strikeout rate. That's terrific. Like, that wouldn't surprise me at all. So,
Again, the difference in parks, and just look at the track record. I mean, not that Sale has a bad track record, but, I mean, what Kershaw's done throughout his career, but over the last 5 seasons, has been absolutely just silly. I mean, he doesn't have a whip above 0.92, and it's mostly ERAs in the ones. I mean, He's definitely number one still for me by a decent margin. So I would agree with you being skeptical of that guy's ranking.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about Jacob DeGrom. I don't think we've discussed DeGrom on this show at all this season, but I find him to be really interesting this year in that he's just been a little bit of a different kind of pitcher. He's getting strikeouts at a higher rate, but he's also walking batters at a much higher rate. I went into the season feeling like he was more of a ratio specialist who would get you enough strikeouts. Now he's getting so many strikeouts and his ratios haven't been very helpful. Do you think this will continue, and do you like this version of DeGrom better or worse?
Yeah, so the Friends and Family League is basically a K-rate league. When you have an innings cap, you know, it's very different than, say, your weekly league. So I personally probably prefer this just because of the K-rate. But it is very different than I expected. The velocity is way up. I believe it's 95.0 average fastball. His BABIP is 40 points higher than his career mark. So, and he's just been a bit unlucky, but you're right, not really unlucky with the walk rate. That's been a different approach than expected, but I personally like it, and I expect a lower ratios moving forward.
Yeah, and I mean, when owners are speculating on maybe what a pitcher could be, with the strikeout rate really high and the ratios being low in previous seasons, I mean, you hope that like it's easy to see where there's a clear path to him being really, really, really good at some point this year, where he continues to strike out batters at such a high rate, gets the walk rate down a little bit at least, and then gets the ratios down, and now he's the total package. And earlier in today's show, Matthew and I were talking about how there are so few pitchers to target in a trade right now because so many, if you want to go high, because so many of the aces, beyond the Kershaw Scherzer sale, so many of the aces are either injured or have underperformed. DeGrom, I think, is one of the more attractive trade targets out there where you know you should be getting the strikeouts and hopefully you'll get the ratios, and most importantly, he's not on the disabled list.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think he's a little banged up right now, but he was so good last year before he did suffer that injury. I mean, let's not forget, before the All-Star break last year, he 2.61 ERA, 1.11 whip. So I think all these strikeouts and just the fact that he's proven in the past he can get the ratios down, I'm pretty happy with it. Let's put it this way. I'm not looking to sell DeGrom in this week.
No, I understand that. And sticking with the Mets, the last pitcher player for your team that I want to discuss is Matt Harvey, who we also haven't discussed that much this year, although we should have because he's really, really interesting. I think we talked about him once. But, like, how do you feel about Matt Harvey on your roster right now? And, like, what do you suggest that people, Harvey owners, do with him? Is there a league where, are there leagues where you would drop him?
All right, so we talked about a lot of the good things that have gone my way so far this year. I've always been a Harvey guy. He was dropped in this league. This was an added player by me. And since then, he's been even worse than before. Ever since they moved him up one start in that turn unexpectedly, look at the last three starts, five walks, four walks, four walks, just an ugly strikeout-to-walk ratio. The K's haven't been there. Coming off a real down season last year, I don't know what to make of him. I might just out of catharsis drop him while we're recording this right now. I am over the innings cap in this league, which is something that could be a problem, but my strategy in that is that pitchers always get hurt, especially my staff. That's a lot of injury-prone guys, so I figure I might as well just go for it now and just deal with the injuries later. I'm sure that's going to drop my pace. But Harvey's not a guy you should be too excited about moving forward. It's really hard to – I mean, just all the lack of control, the lack of missed bats. So I'm probably going to drop him very, very soon. And speaking of dropping Mets players, I drafted Michael Conforto and dropped him early on in the season.
Oh, that hurts. That one is yep. That – yeah, I have a few of those in my history where you make that move earlier in the season and you just think, oh, no. But
yeah, short benches in this league, and he was not getting regular at bats at the time. But man, what a disaster! He's been really, really truthfully one of the best players, one of the best hitters in all of baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and going back to Harvey for a second, I think I've been starting. I just kind of switched in some of the Twitter chat sessions the last week or two, saying to people, go ahead and drop him, in the shallower leagues. And I usually think about whether or not when you want to drop someone who's a big name like Harvey. Is it reasonable to think that his production this year will get back up to a level where you'll really, really regret dropping him? And I just feel like he's not even close to the kind of pitcher right now who you would, he'd have to come so far to the point where he's posting these starts where you're like, oh my God, like you're thinking with Conforto, at least you could see a path for Conforto where you're like, okay, I can't afford to keep him, but if he got the playing time, I guess I might regret this. With Harvey, I don't know, it'd have to be a major change in his performance before you. Even if he gets, what I mean to say is even if he gets a little better, I don't think it's enough that you'll really regret it.
I agree. I mean, to go along with all those walks, he's allowed 11 homers in 50 innings. I mean, that's not a very good combination.
No, and he's not striking out many batters. There's nothing there where you can say, okay, everything's good if he can just, if he can just keep the ball in the yard a little more, or if he can just walk a few fewer batters, he's close to being what we hope he is. Like right now he seems really far. When you're pitching really poorly and your FIP's much higher than your ERA, then that's
isn't it weird though how good he was over the first three seasons of his career, and then maybe last year you could blame on an injury, and then it's pretty inexplicable.
It is, and yeah, is it that injury? Is it the year in 2015 where he went so deep into the postseason and went beyond what he really wanted to, and that whole controversy, and hasn't really ever been the same since? We'll never know. I don't think he'll really either ever know. And I'm hoping that there'll be a time where we can talk about how Harvey's awesome again, and that this was a down period, and he's rediscovered his health, and he's awesome. But I just don't see that happening like in the next couple months. So, and in a lot of leagues, especially those Yahoo leagues that don't have really long benches, like owners need that spot for somebody else. Maybe you drop him and pick up a Joe Ross or someone like that who is just recalled and had a nice start and probably has more potential than Harvey right now. Is that a switch you would make, for example, if he was available in your league?
Yeah, it is. I'm gonna drop him today, even in a 14-team league. I agree with you. There's theoretical upside, but as you said, he would have to just improve his performance so significantly. It's just unlikely at this point. I mean, we're at a 140 inning sample now over the last 2 years of just below mediocre pitching, and there's just something wrong here.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. Our final takeaway from today is, don't be a slave to big name value, because big names only, they look good on the roster list, but they don't always lead to production. Thanks, Dalton, for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. And to close in Matthew's words, thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Dalton and Matthew, for taking the time to talk.